What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. We have tons of tools to get you ready to smoke your buffoon league mates in our redraft rankings manifesto. Whether you're looking for our consensus tiered-based rankings, top 200s, and by position, fantasy football news blurbs to keep you informed and find this year's Puka Nacua, risk ratings so you know how risky the draft picks you're spending are, the truth series so you can see how their 2023 season went, or you can compare our rankings to Sleeper, to ESPN, to Underdog, to Yahoo, to NFL, whichever platform you're drafting on, we have you covered this year with our Redraft Rankings Manifesto. Right now, you can get our draft guide for free by signing up on Underdog Fantasy using just $10 and using code FSE. If you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com. Use the code FSE for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and all of that is linked in the description of all of our videos if you need the links for that. All right, let's roll the pod. In the late rounds, we are always targeting running backs that can hit super high ceiling, super high upside. And today I got Jared Smola from Draft Sharks, who just wrote a great article ranking the handcuffs around the NFL. And it kind of spawned this idea for me that we would break down some great zero RB targets for you guys. This week, we've been dropping strategy videos on zero RB, hero RB, and double hero RB. I feel like on a micro level, it'd be probably smart to say which guys we're actually going after in this area of the draft. So Jared, I'll let you get started here and introduce yourself. For those of you that don't know, or maybe you guys remember, a couple seasons ago, I actually wrote for Draft Sharks, did some DFS articles, did some DFS content on their YouTube channel. So Jared's actually been a bit of a springboard for me in this industry. So I'll let you introduce yourself, Jared.
Yeah, you can find all my stuff at draftsharks.com. I lose track how long I've been there now, 10, 12 years. So it's been a good run. Pumped about what we got going on over there. We've launched so many awesome tools over the past couple of years that I'm pumped about. I mean, starting with the draft war room. If you guys have a draft coming up, this thing is awesome. You'll get, you know, custom rankings based on your league settings, and it live syncs to your draft room. So, like, you know, players come off the board as they're picked. It sort of re-ranks guys based on your team needs and ADP. So that's definitely a tool I would recommend checking out.
Yeah, for sure. And Jared's been routinely at the top of the accuracy contest pretty much year over year. So definitely somebody that I wanted to have on this channel just to kind of break down and get your opinion on these players. Because for me, I'm usually going light at this position. I usually want to make sure that I can hit on some of the Devin Singletary, Kyren Williams of last year breakout candidates in this area. So let's start with the article that you broke down. It is a free article, so people can go check it out. I'll link it down below in the description, and you basically ranked the best running back handcuffs in 2024. And I'm semi annoyed that I didn't think of this first, because people who follow this channel know that this is something that I probably would have done, where you basically go through what makes the ideal handcuff. And I'll kind of let you explain your process on that.
Yeah, I totally stumbled across this idea because I knew I wanted to write a handcuff article. So I just opened up my, you know, Google Doc and started sort of jotting down some ideas of, you know, what I thought, like you said, makes a good handcuff. And as I was doing that, I was like, you know, shoot, why don't I just actually score every handcuff in these four categories, average them out, and kind of come up with these rankings. So the four categories I came up with: talent, self-explanatory; depth chart, which is basically how safe is this guy as the team's number two running backs. I think that's important, right? We want ideally guys that are kind of locked in, where if we know that starter goes down, that this guy's definitely going to be the guy who steps in and takes, you know, most of, if not all, that starter's work. So that's the second category. Third category, offense strength. For this one, I use the implied totals from all the Vegas lines, which there's an article up on Draft Sharks on that too, where we're just ranking every offense based on the implied total. So that one was easy. I just sort of, you know, from 10 down to one, ranked how strong these offenses are. And then the fourth category is starter risk. So that is, you know, a combination of between injury risk and just, you know, decline benching risk. You know, what's the likelihood that this starter is going to end up missing time this season? So again, ranked all these guys and, you know, scored all these guys from 1 to 10 in those four categories, averaged it out. And that kind of gave us these handcuff rankings.
Yeah, because as we know, like, running back handcuffs are not all created equally. Like, there's been periods of time where we've known, like, a couple great handcuffs. I think a couple years ago, we had, like, the Alexander Madisons of the world, the Kareem Hunts of the world, where, like, we knew if Dalvin Cook or Nick Chubb went down, those guys were going to be just absolute locked and loaded workhorse running backs. There's varying degrees of handcuff. Not every number two running back around the NFL is A, going to get a huge workload if the starter goes down, and B, actually good enough to do anything with that workload. And I think a good example of this last year was
was in the 14th round of my home league. I drafted Deion Jackson because Jonathan Taylor came into the season kind of banged up. And of course, Zach Moss was the guy that you actually needed there. So sometimes we don't even know who the number two guy is, which is, I think, an important part of this. Like, for example, in Atlanta, we know Tyler Allgeier is the number two guy, but there's other backfields where it's a little bit more up in the air. Like you have Rico Dowdle listed there with the Cowboys. It could be Royce Freeman as the number two back for all we know, because they've been talking him up. So let's go through kind of like the first couple handcuffs that really rated out as like the top end guys. You have listed here like the top five dudes: Blake Corum, Ty Chandler, Zach Charbonnet, Rico Dowdle, and Tyler Allgeier.
Yeah, and Blake Corum comes in tops here by a pretty significant margin too. I mean, you can see he's half point ahead of the guys tied for number two here, which I think makes sense. Like, that checks out to me. I think Blake Corum is the best handcuff in fantasy football right now. I mean, you can argue his talent, and I listed him as a six talent, and he could go down to a five. You know, some people might go up to a seven. You know, big college production. Some of the efficiency stuff we look at tailed off last year after the knee injury. So I think the big question with Corum is, you know, can he rediscover that 2022 form? But again, I'm not sure how much that matters, because he is locked in as the number two running back in LA. This is a strong offense. It's a Sean McVay offense that regularly produces big running back numbers. You know, we've seen multiple guys, even, you know, lesser talents, put up nice numbers in this system. And then Kyren Williams. So I should mention this too, you know, part of the starter risk number that I have here, we do have our injury predictor at Draft Sharks, which we have, I'm pretty sure, the most comprehensive injury database on the internet. And then we have an algorithm that is going to, you know, give us injury predictions for these guys. So we predict percent chance of injury in the upcoming season, then also projected games missed. According to that algorithm, Kyren Williams has the fourth highest percent chance of injury this season among any running back. So that's why you know, Corum got a pretty high starter risk score. I like Kyren Williams, but he is pretty risky. And I think it's pretty certain that if Kyren does go down, you know, Corum would be a feature back in that offense.
Yeah. I mean, McVay will give anybody a feature workload. Like, we've seen Cam Akers, Daryl Henderson, Royce Freeman, Sony Michel. Like, it doesn't matter who the starting running back for the Rams has been really over the last couple of years. There's been monster spike production out of any one of the names that I just mentioned. Like, Sony Michel was winning people fantasy championships like 2 or 3 years ago, and he's like not even in the league anymore. Like, Sean McVay can turn pretty much any running back into a featured starter. And like you said, kind of, I'm imagining all the stuff that goes into that starter risk for Kyren Williams, or the fact that he kind of already starts the offseason banged up, and the fact that he's like 195 pounds and that kind of thing. So I'm sure, you know, age and touches and things of that nature all kind of factored into that stuff. And people on this channel know that I dive deep into, like, you know, the Christian McCaffreys of the world, the Aaron Joneses of the world, the guys who are up there in age in terms of how many touches they have under their belt. Let's talk about these two guys tied for second place here. You got Ty Chandler and Zach Charbonnet. Who, Chandler, I think you're going to need to explain yourself a little bit. I think people understand why Charbonnet is this high.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chandler, let's start with him. I think he's definitely locked in as number two, right? I mean, there's not much else in Minnesota we have to worry about. By the way, these handcuff scores and rankings don't take into account standalone value either. This is just strictly like handcuff value. I think Ty Chandler might have some standalone value. I think it's going to be a committee in Minnesota with him and Aaron Jones. So again, he's locked in as the number two. And then Aaron Jones, I mean, this guy turns 30 in December. He's missed multiple games in five of his seven NFL seasons. Our injury predictor gives him an 88% chance of injury this season. That's actually just behind Kyren Williams. So I think there's a good chance you see Ty Chandler, at least for a handful of games this year, be Minnesota's lead back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can he's been a guy that I've been really taking a lot in underdog drafts, mainly because, like you said, he probably has a standalone role as well. Charbonnet, again, I don't think we have to explain too much here. I feel like Charbonnet's workload is probably better than Kenneth Walker's if Kenneth Walker goes down. Yes. Because if there's only one guy, and I guess the same would probably be true if Charbonnet went down, but if there's only one guy in this backfield, we'd have to figure that they're probably getting a little bit more of a three down workload than when both of them are healthy. So that one, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. Rico Dowdle, again, I think that one's also kind of self-explanatory. Zeke is old as hell. He has a lot of touches under his belt. Rico Dowdle, I'd almost not even necessarily put as like the number two on that team, because I think it's possible that he's the number one on that team. And we actually had a report today basically saying that he's like the favorite to lead the team in rushing, according to one of the beat reporters or something. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Dowdle there?
Yeah, Dowdle's definitely murky. Like, he could be the number one. He could be the number three. There was the quote from Stephen Jones like a week ago kind of saying that, you know, Rico might be on the roster bubble, and he was talking to Royce Freeman. I don't buy all that. I think Rico is at least the number two. I'm with you. I think you know, even as early as week one, we could see Rico Dowdle leading this backfield in touches. So yeah, like if you look at our overall running back rankings on Draft Sharks, like Dowdle's going to be higher, but again, just in, strictly as a handcuff, this is kind of where he falls.
Yeah, absolutely. He makes total sense there. If I had to do this exercise, I would probably put Algier one because I think that, again, you're obviously factoring in the fact that Bijan is not likely to get injured. He's a young running back. He doesn't have that many touches under his belt. But I think if we did nuke all 32 running backs who are starters in the NFL, I think Tyler Algier would probably be the number one running back in fantasy just because I think he's one of the most talented backups. I think you're talking about a guy that would legitimately have a three down workload in a great offense with a great offensive coordinator now with some quarterback play there.
Yeah, so it sounds like you would bump his talent score up a little bit. I mean, I gave him a six. You could definitely argue him to a seven. Yeah, but what hurts, I mean, two things kind of hurt Algier here. One, you know, the offense strength for Atlanta is a six. And again, that's based on the implied totals. You know, that's, you know, Dowdle by comparison got an eight. You know, the Cowboys implied for way more points in Atlanta. But yeah, the big thing is the starter risk. Algier got just a three there. You know, Bijan Robinson, young, elite, low chance of injury per our injury predictor, just 42% chance. So that's what's keeping Algier back. But yeah, like you said, Corey, if all these starters went down, I think Algier to me would be right there with, I think, Corum and Charbonnet as, like, you know, the best fantasy plays if all these starters got hurt.
Yeah, for sure. So let's rip through a couple more here. You got Trey Benson, Marshawn Lloyd, Damian Pierce, and Jalen Wright all tied at a 6.0 score here. I think you could make the argument that some of these guys are in more kind of like ambiguous backfields than they are like prototypical handcuffs. And for that reason, some of these guys would have some standalone value. Mm-hmm. And specifically, I would say in Trey Benson's case and Jalen Wright's case, maybe some like late season upside that they could just outright supplant the starter in front of them. Whereas Damian Pierce and Lloyd, I think it would be more likely that if the starter doesn't go down, they're probably just pure handcuffs.
Yeah, for sure. And Jalen Wright's the first guy we go to here. I think that there are seven guys on this list who are actually, you know, their team's number three running backs, where it's just the top two are just too much of a committee to consider either guy a handcuff. So I just went with the third guy. And I did kind of factor that into their depth chart and starter risk scores. I kind of lowered those to, you know, account for the fact that these guys are third on the depth chart. But I mean, Jalen Wright, I think, has two outs here where if either Mostert or Achane went down, like Miami does not want to hand either of those guys a massive workload. So I think if either Mostert or Achane went down, you know, you'd see Jalen Wright mixing in for, you know, 8 to 12 touches. And I just think, you know, he was a prospect that I think definitely could have gone either way in terms of, you know, hitting or not, but landing in Miami definitely helps his chances, right? Like, I think that's the ideal fit for him.
Yeah, I mean, I had him comp to kind of like one of these raw Miles Sanders-y kind of prospects where you get the great athleticism. You need a little bit of development on his front, but playing behind a veteran running back like Raheem Mostert in a system that really rewards running backs who can create stuff on their own with their own athleticism, like we've seen from Achane last year. I think Jalen Wright is the best like dual handcuff upside running back in fantasy because, like you said, I would imagine, I don't have it in front of me, but I would imagine Raheem Mostert ranks probably first, if not extremely high, on chances to get injured this year.
Yes, I don't have it in front of me either, but I know he is definitely in the top five.
Yeah, exactly. Pierce has been one of the guys for the Texans that I've been drafting a lot of because, I mean, I don't know what his deal was last year. He clearly wasn't the same player, or maybe it wasn't a good scheme fit or whatever the case is. But I think Mixon is also the type of dude that you would pencil in to potentially miss some time, given that he is older and has a lot of touches under his belt. So Pierce, he for the longest time, he was an 18th round pick in best ball. And I've been absolutely hammering the crap out of Damian Pierce because the upside is a top five scoring offense's goal line back if Joe Mixon is down.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, Mostert's our third most likely running back to get injured. Joe Mixon sitting here somewhere around like 15th. So definitely with you there. Pierce is tough. I mean, yeah, I think it was the scheme fit last year that you know, was the issue for him. And they're back in the same scheme this year. But there's been some positive buzz from the coaching staff, a lot of it actually, on Pierce's offseason, kind of how he's progressed, which we didn't hear much of, if any, last year. So that's definitely positive. And again, like, talent is just 25% of this equation. That might even be way too heavily. Like, you know, we just want backs that are going to get the ball if the starter goes down. And I feel pretty confident Pierce would be that guy for a good Texans offense if Joe Mixon got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, if I think of, like, if I just simulated to week seven right now and looked at my week seven running back rankings, like, there's going to be guys who are total slappies in my top 15, top 20 running backs. That's why we value handcuffs. And that's why we care about backup running backs, is because if you're talented, great. Like, that definitely helps you out. And Trey Benson, Marshawn Lloyd also kind of fit that bill as well. But, like, you don't even have to be talented if you're going to be, like, getting a workhorse role. Like, I don't think Zamir White is very good, but he was a guy that people could start in their lineups down the stretch last year when Josh Jacobs was out for a couple games there. So let's move past that range. Again, Benson and Lloyd are both guys that could maybe have some late season appeal. I specifically Benson with James Conner's injury history and the fact that I think he was, I had him rated as the best running back in the class, if not a top two running back in the class. So he specifically, I think it's tough because Conner is a great player and I'm not going to shit talk James Conner as a player, but I actually think Benson needs to learn a little bit from a player like James Conner, just from like a real football standpoint. So Benson, I view as, technically he's a handcuff as of now. Everything they've said in camp has been Conner's our dude. Benson's clearly not going to, you know, compete for the starting job in week one. But I do think that Benson has a chance as the season goes along to maybe take over that role, even if Conner's just like not 100%.
Yeah, and there's been some stuff too about Benson even being behind like Michael Carter, and they've been using Amari DiMercato on passing downs, which like whatever, it's early August. Like I think if Conner did go down, Benson would be the guy, at least the best fantasy bet. So that's worth monitoring. But yeah, that did keep Benson a bit lower in these rankings than he might have been otherwise.
Yeah, I think also too, like we've seen sometimes that like running backs like their certain archetypes to play certain roles. So like they're going to say Michael Carter or DiMercato, whoever the pass catching back is ahead of Trey Benson on the depth chart because Trey Benson is Connor's backup, not necessarily the number two back in terms of overall snaps if everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, it's fair.
All right. So talking about some obviously lesser guys, because we're going down these handcuff scores here. You got Bucky Irving, Antonio Gibson, Elijah Mitchell, Chuba Hubbard, who, of course, definitely has a chance for a standalone role early on in the season with Jonathan Brooks coming back. Anybody stand out to you there, or are you kind of just, they're all backup running backs and they're fine?
Yeah. Well, to me, the interesting guys are the guys that have the big offense strength scores. So that would be Elijah Mitchell, who gets a 10, and then even a bit farther down, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I put in here as the Chiefs handcuff still, but it might be Denarius Prince. You know, I gave CEH a 1 for depth chart score because I'm not sure. Prince has been running ahead of him throughout camp. That might just be because they know what CEH is, which is, you know, not a very good running back, but they might want to just give Prince a chance to see if he can be the guy. So whoever wins that job in Kansas City, super valuable handcuff. We have Isaiah Pacheco as the second most likely running back to get injured this season. So just a big opportunity in an awesome offense. And then, obviously San Francisco, Christian McCaffrey already dealing with an injury. But even with Elijah Mitchell, there's been some Jordan Mason buzz. Elijah Mitchell's hurt now already. He, is quite a big injury risk. So we'll have to see who wins both of those jobs. I think whoever wins those two number two jobs will probably end up rising these rankings, by late August.
Yeah, quickly, I just want to know what goes into the Pacheco potentially being the second highest injury risk, because he's young. He doesn't really have a whole lot of injury history, at least in terms of that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's young, but he does have quite a few injuries. And we even go back to college with some of these. So those are baked in. And then the other, just big variable in predicting injuries, especially at running back, is just projected touches in the coming season. More projected touches in the coming season increases injury risk. We have Pacheco projected for quite a big workload this year. So he does come out as the second biggest injury risk at running back.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So going through the other guys, there's not a whole lot of interesting players here. Like I was once a guy that was defending Tank Bigsby Bags because I thought he was a half decent player. He looked one of the worst, probably the worst running back in the NFL last year. Then you also have Kendre Miller, who Dennis Allen doesn't really seem to even acknowledge exists. Audric Estime and Tyrone Tracy have been huge, huge targets of mine late in best ball drafts as well. Anybody, we can kind of just skim over these last couple. If there's anybody that sticks out to you, you can kind of just call them out. Otherwise, we'll get into the zero RB targets at the end here.
Yeah. Tank Bigsby is interesting. We fight about him a lot around the Draft Sharks office because I'm sort of with you, Corey. Like his rookie year was about as bad as it gets. And I didn't even love him much coming out as a prospect. But like there's been buzz on him again this spring and summer. They didn't really add anything. Like he should have a clear path to the number two if he's not horrible. And it's a pretty solid offense. Like I'm still open to Tank Bigsby. I take shots on him in round 18, round 19. But I will not be surprised if he's, out of the league in 2 or 3 years. He might just be bad.
Yeah, totally. And then, Estime and Tracy, like I said, I think both of those guys fit into the next conversation that we're going to have here. Mm-hmm. And we can kind of transition into favorite zero RB targets who are more so like, not necessarily the guaranteed backups. They actually have a chance to have standalone roles, or they have a chance to at least provide some late season upside. So for me, going over some running backs who are kind of ranked outside the dead zone is like kind of the cutoff that we're talking about here, who you think are great for either managed leagues or maybe best ball. I would say most of the people listening to this are probably focused on managed leagues, who they know when to start these players. But excluding kind of the raw handcuff targets in the late rounds, who are your favorite like zero RB targets?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned Estime, because I'm just big time in on Denver's backfield. I try to leave every best ball draft I do with at least one of Javonte Williams, Audric Estime, or Jaleel McLaughlin. And a lot of that is just Sean Payton. Sean Payton produced a top 22 running back in PPR points per game in all 15 of his seasons as the Saints head coach. That streak was snapped last year in Denver. But the Broncos as a team last year still ranked sixth in total running back PPR points. There were still a lot of fantasy points to go around in this backfield. They just happened to be spread. And, you know, and maybe that's the case again this season, but Javonte Williams is one of my favorite targets at ADP right now. We know he was, you know, inefficient last year, not a surprise coming off that injury. That was a nasty, nasty knee injury he suffered. I think, you know, the team knew, we should have known that he was not going to be the same player last year, but there's been a lot of positive buzz from both the media and Sean Payton himself on how Javonte has looked in camp so far. And if he is healthy, like, he was a really strong prospect coming out, you know, really good tackle breaking numbers at North Carolina, was pretty good his first, you know, season and a half in the NFL, 4.4 yards per carry before that knee injury, 59 catches in his first 21 NFL games. Like, he's the back in Denver that can do a lot both on the ground and in the passing game, right? Like, I think Jaleel McLaughlin kind of is what he is. He's going to get 8 to 12 touches per game, useful in best ball for sure. Estime, I like. I think he's an early down guy, probably not going to contribute in the passing game. Javonte is the guy where if he's healthy, he can be, you know, something close to a 3-down back.
It's so weird when you look back, you're like, oh, Javonte did nothing last year. Like, I'm assuming most people assume that he did nothing last year, but he literally was 15th in weighted opportunities per game. Like, he had 58 targets and 217 carries in a season where he like totally did not look like he was a healthy player. And they still gave him all of that work. So knowing that, like, at first the offseason started out and people were like, oh, Javonte Williams, like, probably not going to lose his job. People said there was that report that he might be on the roster bubble or whatever it was. But then now all the buzz has been positive on him. It's been, he looks better. He's slimmed down. He's work ethic. He looks healthy. All this kind of stuff has come out with Javonte Williams. He was a guy that I was so high on entering his second year. And he absolutely burned me with his ACL tear that he suffered in week two of that season. So I hesitate to go back in on Javonte Williams, but I think the price tag that you're getting on him, especially in managed leagues, like, you're going to know when to start this guy. Like, if eighth, ninth round, you get Javonte Williams after you already draft a bunch of wide receivers, quarterback, tight end, maybe a hero running back start or whatever, you're going to lock him right into your RB2 slot.
Yeah. And again, I'm not huge on taking my own running backs handcuffed, but when they're this cheap, I think it makes a ton of sense. Like, take Javonte in round 8, take Audric Estime in round 15 or 16. Like, I think there's a good chance that one of those guys is someone you can feel, you know, pretty good about starting on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, and we didn't consult in terms of which guys you have and which guy. I'm assuming you probably have this player too, because everybody loves Jaylen Warren. Literally everybody loves Jaylen Warren. So for me, he is easily one of my favorite zero RB targets to get as like my RB2 after I draft a very flimsy build at the running back position early on in drafts. And with Jaylen Warren, I look at him as he could legitimately get 220 touches easily without Najee Harris going down, with the amount that Arthur Smith is going to want to run the football. If they get Brandon Ayuk, that's just all better news for the run game, because it's going to mean they're going to move the offense that much more. I don't know who's going to start, whether it's Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. I think probably Fields is the better option for the run game, because he'll obviously draw defenders out of the box and things of that nature with his own legs. But Jaylen Warren, to me, I look at him as a very cheap, discounted version of Jahmyr Gibbs and Devon Achane. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's not nearly as good of offenses as those guys, but the touch amount might be quite similar. And he's also probably just as talented as those guys too.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Warren's been an easy buy all offseason. I think he was RB22 in PPR points last year. Now he gets a run heavier offense with an upgraded O-line. The Steelers poured a lot of resources into that line this offseason. It's very obvious what Arthur Smith wants to do. I think the Steelers are going to be one of the run heaviest offenses in the NFL, and Warren obviously be a big part of that.
Oh yeah, big time. So who do you got number two?
Yeah, a player that I think is a similar archetype to Jalen Warren. I like Tyjae Spears. For starters, I'm higher on the Titans offense than the market. I think Brian Callahan coming in, they're going to throw more. Kind of optimistic about Will Levis. It's a little scary. Like, I think he can still go either way, but I like what I'm hearing out of Titans camp so far. We'll see how he does in the preseason. But if he's just okay, I think this offense could surprise. Then you have, you know, Tyjae Spears. I'm kind of buying this being pretty close to a 50-50 split between Tyjae Spears and Tony Pollard. Spears coming off a really impressive rookie season. He caught 52 passes. That was the 10th most by a rookie running back over the past 10 seasons and was also really good on the ground. 49 running backs had 90 plus carries last year. Spears ranked 11th among those 49 in yards after contact per attempt. He was fourth among those 49 in PFF elusive rating. So this guy can do it on the ground and in the passing game. And I think he's you know, a big value in RB3 range.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think some people might get caught up in the fact that they paid Tony Pollard. It's like, why would you pay Tony Pollard if you were just going to roll with Tyjae Spears anyway? But I think sometimes people forget that, like, these teams don't know that, like, they could just very easily transition to Tyjae Spears midseason. And also it's a position you want depth at and things of that nature. So this kind of totally reminds me of, like, Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard last year, where I not that Chuba Hubbard is like a world beater, but I wasn't convinced that Miles Sanders was any good because he played in the best offense in the league, behind the best offensive line in the league. And the second you got him out of that situation, he looked like a very, very pedestrian running back. So for me, I think Tony Pollard, you can't get into a better situation than he was in last year. He was like top five in the NFL and inside the five carries, and he was terrible for fantasy. So maybe it was injury. He was coming off of like surgery or whatever the year before. But to me, I think he might just be washed. And Spears is the guy that I'm targeting to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, or if you're Tennessee and you're evaluating Pollard, like, this guy was one of the most efficient backs in the league prior to last year on smaller workloads, right? Then Dallas tried to make him this feature back. I think the injury was part of it last year. I think he might just not be built for that type of workload. So maybe Tennessee evaluated him and, you know, sees him as part of a 50-50 committee, and that's kind of what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I'm totally on board with that. I think one other guy that I'll talk about, my kind of other zero RB target here, is he's one of these guys I kind of have to plug my nose when I draft because I'm not like a huge fan of the player. But I really do think that Brian Robinson could have a big year this year. Part of that Commanders offense where you now have a mobile quarterback, the best quarterback that's played in Washington in the last number of years, as much as I kind of thought Sam Howell was like semi fun. And I guess to back to the like Titans, like if Will Levis is Sam Howell, that's kind of what you're hoping for that offense. Brian Robinson has a chance really to come into the season and be a goal line back for a mobile quarterback and an offense that could be really exciting. Like, I don't think he's got a whole lot of upside. I don't think he's going to likely finish top 15 in points per game because he's pretty much a zero in the passing game. And Austin Eckler's there probably to take every route off of his plate too. But at the same time, I think he could punch in 11 touchdowns this year, maybe be like kind of what Gus Edwards was last year.
Yeah, Robinson, I think you nailed it. He's just like a nice safety blanket if you're in round 10 and you still need that, you know, second running back, like a guy who's going to get 200 plus carries, right? And I think most often we want the pass catching back, obviously, especially in full PPR. I think in Washington, we might want the more of the early down guy because, you know, like you said, Jaden Daniels, mobile runner, we know that helps rushing efficiency. And Jaden Daniels is not going to be checking the ball down very often, right? He's either going to take a sack or he's going to take off and scramble himself. So I think that's going to hurt Austin Eckler, where I think Robinson, again, you know, despite the fact that he's not going to catch a ton of balls, I think is the back to target in Washington.
Yeah. We've seen that be the case in like Baltimore, for example, too. It's like, how did the Baltimore running backs with Lamar Jackson get there? It's like, you didn't want Justice Hill. You wanted Gus Edwards or now Derrick Henry, the guy that's going to punch in the touchdowns. And same goes for like Philadelphia too. Like last year, DeAndre Swift had a career low in targets in that Philadelphia Eagles offense with a mobile quarterback. And the guy that like Miles Sanders 2 years ago before that didn't really have a huge workload through the air. He was just punching in touchdowns. That's, I think, how these offenses behave when you have a mobile quarterback like that. So Brian Robinson to me kind of makes sense as, okay, I'm going to just take my vanilla milkshake RB2 after I've already drafted like nine other players. And I'm already weak at that position. So who's your final zero RB target here?
Yeah, I've been drafting Jonathan Brooks all offseason. I'm just going to continue drafting him as he, you know, probably drops in price now. You know, we got the news from Dave Canales that Brooks is not going to play in the preseason, might not be ready until week three or four. That's honestly behind schedule where I thought he'd be. I thought he'd be ready for week one. Not to say that he would have been, you know, a big fantasy factor early in the season, but he's maybe a few weeks behind where I thought he'd be. But I still think over the second half of the season, and especially if we're talking, you know, these big basketball tournaments or even some of the, you know, bigger managed tournaments like FFPC main event, like we want these guys peaking late in the season. And I still think Brooks could be like a top 15 running back over the second half of the season. I'm a big believer in his game. I think he's a three down back. He has the size to be a three down back. The Panthers obviously love him. They traded up to take him 46th overall as the first running back off the board. And I just, you know, Chuba Hubbard is his biggest challenger for touches. And if Chuba Hubbard's your biggest challenger for touches, like that's a pretty clear path to a big workload. We just saw Dave Canales help Rashad White to that breakout season. I think Brooks is pretty much just a better version of Rashad White. So again, I think if this guy's healthy second half of the year, he could be a guy that we're, you know, ranking as a top 15 running back every week.
Yeah, I'm like very uniquely qualified to comment on this situation because not only am I a Texas Longhorns fan, so I watched Jonathan Brooks obviously intently last year. I'm also a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, so I watched Dave Canales' offense intently. So yeah, I mean, I think that's the usage profile you're looking for. If he's even just inefficient like Rashad White was, you can still see a path to 75 plus targets on the season on a full pace if Jonathan Brooks is back healthy by week three, week four, or whatever the case is. The one thing I have a little bit of a hang up on Jonathan Brooks on is like when he hits, what does this Panthers offense look like? Are they putting it, have they put it all together, or are they like still a bottom five unit like kind of Vegas projects them to be?
Yeah, that's fair. But I think, like you said, I mean, we know it's volume over everything at running back. That's what matters most. We'd like the Panthers to be good. And I think they could take a step forward, right? I mean, Canales has done a good job at, you know, two different spots recently. Bryce Young was the number one overall pick. I'm not like super optimistic about him turning it around, but there's always a chance. But more than anything else, like if Brooks is a guy getting 15 to 20 touches per game over the second half of the season, that's probably not going to matter too much how good this Panthers offense is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's totally the right call in terms of late season upside, especially in those season long tournaments and things of that nature. So I'm going to rattle off a couple other ones that we didn't really mention. Like I know they're technically, we talked about them in the handcuff segment, but to me, just draft, like if you want to draft both Cowboys running backs and just be like, I'm going to get the guy right some way or another, I think that's totally viable in managed formats and even maybe best ball leagues as well. Ezekiel Elliott and Rico Dowdle, definitely both viable, like 11th, 12th round picks where they're going.
Yep. Cowboys implied for the fifth most points in the NFL. Like just take that backfield, see what happens.
And the final zero RB target that I have to me represents the highest upside swing, but it is probably the riskiest pick in all of fantasy football, especially as his price gets higher and higher with positive camp reports. But I just simply cannot quit J.K. Dobbins. I simply can't. He's been one of my, he was my RB2 back in 2020 behind Jonathan Taylor when I scouted the class. I love J.K. Dobbins. I always have. He's been like a career 5 yards per carry guy anytime he's been healthy on the field. I know the history of Achilles tear running backs. It's not breaking news to me. I know it's not the type of situation you want to invest in, but I mean, Gus Edwards is the bar that he's got to climb right now. Kamani Vidal's AFK. Nobody knows where that guy is. The beat reporters can't even spell his name correctly. Like, I'm not worried about Kamani Vidal at all. J.K. Dobbins has legitimate 10-plus rushing touchdown upside in an offense that has two absolutely bookend tackles. They have a great quarterback. They're going to run the football. That's all they've pretty much said anytime Jim Harbaugh's been behind a microphone. And J.K. Dobbins has beaten out Gus Edwards on two different occasions so far. So as long as he's healthy, and he appears to be, according to all signs and reports that we've heard, I think it's very possible that he ends up being like a top 18 running back in fantasy this year.
Corey, J.K. Dobbins sunk my fantasy season last year. We always talk about, you know, making sure you're careful with your exposures. I was not careful with my Dobbins exposure last year. I had way too much of him. First half of week one was beautiful. He was gonna have a massive season, and then we all know what happened. So I'm a little gun shy based on what happened last year, but I mean, I think you nailed everything you said, and I think Dobbins is cheap enough still where like you can take the risk even if he doesn't make it, you know, back from the Achilles injury. It's not going to kill you, and if he does, I'm with you. You know, he could definitely be, you know, a top 20 running back in that offense.
Yeah, and people, like when I tweet anything positive about J.K. Dobbins, people get on me like I've never heard of Achilles tears for running back. I'm well aware of it. It's just the difference is that Cam Akers coming off of an Achilles tear was a 5th round pick. James Robinson was a 6th round pick. Marlon Mack, a 7th round pick. Like, we're not paying that price tag for J.K. Dobbins. Like, if you draft him in a managed league in like round 13, where he goes on home league sites right now, and he sucks, you cut bait with him and you churn the waiver wire. If you draft him, like, I mean, all my like closing line ADP looks beautiful on Underdog right now, because I got him in like the 190s and he's like a 150s pick now. But if you get him even late in a best ball tournament in the 17th round or whatever, and all he gives you is a couple spike weeks, like, that's totally fine. Like, if he plays weeks 1 to 7 and then gets hurt again, like, you're totally fine with that price tag. And hell, who knows? Like, week 17 is all that matters in Best Ball Mania 5 anyway. And we've actually seen J.K. Dobbins come back late in the season and actually put up decent numbers 2 years ago. So I do think that on a lot of different levels, he's a great pick late in drafts.
I'm sold. I'm back in. I'm going to start drafting Dobbins again. You got me.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple honorable mention, like ambiguous backfields that I've been targeting. I mean, take your swing on the Giants backfield. It's not a very good offense, but I think Singletary's cheap enough, and Tyrone Tracy's an upside swing that I don't think is terrible either. Speaking of injured players, I mean, managed home leagues, he's going to go way higher than I'm willing to take Nick Chubb, but in sharper rooms where people are kind of hip to like ACL tears for running backs, I've seen him like really, really plummet in rankings, and you can get him in the 12th, 13th, 14th round of Underdog drafts, which, again, is it smart to be investing in Nick Chubb? Probably not. But even if you only get 7 or 8 healthy games out of him in Best Ball Mania 5, that could pay off for you. He could be a very unique piece to get into week 17 should you make that part of the tournament. So he's an interesting guy that I've been weaving in as well. Any kind of honorable mentions that you had before we get out of here?
Well, I think every fantasy podcast now has to mention Chase Brown, right? I think that the Bengals backfield, obviously super interesting. That's, you know, what should be a top five offense if Burrow stays healthy. I was actually out on Brown early in the offseason, which I'm regretting, just because he wasn't good last year. If you look at success rate, he was the worst running back in the entire NFL last year in success rate. You know, he had some big plays, but everything we're hearing out of Cincinnati is just this is an improved player heading into year two. Zach Moss, kind of just a guy, like he's there if Brown stumbles. But I think if Brown does hit, he's the back we're going to want to have in Cincinnati. So he's a guy I've been drafting lately, even though his ADP is climbing.
Yeah, so there's a purposeful reason that I didn't mention him, because he's my like highest drafted running back on Underdog.
Okay, nice.
Going back to 2023's class, going into the draft on like April 25th, you guys can check the timestamps if you don't believe me, he was my number one sleeper in the class. And I drafted him in like literally every dynasty league that I'm in. So I talk about Chase Brown a lot, which is why I purposely didn't talk about him here, because I mean, his price is getting to a point now where I'm like, okay, even I'm like, maybe we should chill a little bit, because he's kind of, I've seen him go in round 8, round 9 of drafts that I've been in. And I think in home leagues, that's definitely going to be a popular sentiment, because it's the Bengals backfield. People look for volume in that area of the draft. So he's still in that like zero RB target range, but I liked him a lot more in round 11, round 12, where he was going before. So he's definitely a guy that I'm still drafting, but I packed my bags already on Underdog. I'm probably not going to draft him again, because I got my closing line value in ADP is like, I drafted him in the 120s when he was going there.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, if Brown's climbing, you know, Moss is going to start falling. I think it's not a bad idea to, you know, add some Moss as he gets cheaper.
Yeah, because I didn't draft him at all when he was going in the 70s or 80s. So I definitely need to weave in some Zach Moss and kind of balance out my exposure to that backfield. Because I do think it's possible that one, if not both of these guys actually have some decent run and maybe pay off at their ADPs. So appreciate you for joining me here, Jared. I think this was a good discussion, giving some people some late round targets at running back, because especially the way that we talk about running backs on this channel, it's very likely that they're going to need running back help late in their draft. So again, give one more shout to where they can find your work, where they can find you on X, Twitter, whatever you're calling it. And appreciate you for coming on.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And I plan on updating that running back handcuff ranking article too throughout August, as we sort of, you know, get a clearer picture of these depth charts. You know, keep checking that out for updates. And then, yeah, all my stuff's on Draft Sharks, and you can follow me on Twitter, X, at SmolaDS.
All right. Appreciate it. Again, thank you guys for watching. Like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you guys want our draft guide, you know how to get it. It'll be linked down below in the pinned comment and in the description. You can sign up on Underdog Fantasy, take advantage of some of these values that we've talked about in this video. Use the promo code FSE when you sign up. Deposit $10 and the draft guide will be in your inbox within 24 hours. Or if you already have an Underdog account or you're in an eligible state, can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com and use the code FSE over there for 7 days for free, 30% off any of the packages there. And also you'll get our dynasty draft guide, our redraft guide, our trade value charts. All of our content is on flockfantasy.com. So in addition to our actual draft guide, you'll get a ton more over there. So with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.